Starting a new parsha, parsha's Maaseh. Maaseh has two mitzvahs asay and four mitzvahs lo asay for a total of six mitzvahs. Mitzvah tav ches, 408. Mitzvahs Yisrael asays arim la levim la sheves ba. And we have to give cities to the Levites. Too bad we don't have any levim today. We usually have a lot of levim, so we should know. They should know that we have to give them cities. And La Sheves, but first of all, the cities have to be appropriate for the Levites to dwell within. Vehein Koltos. And an additional aspect of the cities of the Levium is sometimes they housed other inhabitants besides people who were just Levium, meaning people who killed accidentally, we'll discuss a little bit later exactly what that means, could go to the cities. Now, there were two different institutions. One was the regular cities of the Levium that also served to house people who had killed accidentally to avoid coming on someone who might avenge the blood. And there were special Ari Miklat. There were three cities on each side of the Jordan River that served only as Ari Miklat. That's slightly different rules, but every city that the Levites dwelled in also served as an ir miklat, as a city to house accidental killers. Shenitztavu Yisrael l'seis l'shevet Levi arim l'sheves b'hen, that they have to give the Levites cities to dwell therein. Achar she'en lem chelek b'aret, so they have no inheritance in the land per se. So therefore, we have to provide them with cities from our territories to they have to have somewhere to live. You have to give them cities. So in those times, there were 48 cities that were designated for the Levim. There were six that were specifically designated as Ari Miklad, Vulan Bechulan Hayolo Miklad, that you could use any of them as an Ir Miklad. It's just that three on each side of the Jordan were designated specifically as cities of refuge. Uveseder Shoftim, Mitzvahs Ari Miklad, Vesimin Tafkuf. So when we get to Parsha Shoftim, so we're going to discuss the specific halacha of the Ari Miklad, the ones that were just for refuge. Nichla Bezos Hashem, Mabin Yuchados Lachach, Loosan. One is whether you have to pay money if you go there or not. You have to pay rent, certain other things that are slightly different. So any accidental killer who happens upon, he was probably trying to go there on purpose, an Ir Miklat or one of the Arei Halavim now becomes safe. So not only the city itself, but anywhere inside the Tchum Shabbos of the city counted as an Ir Miklat. So we know that on Shabbos you're allowed to walk within the entire city that you live, plus 2,000 amos outside the city. So the 2,000 amos outside the city are considered somewhat of an annex, a halachic annex to the city. So even though there are no buildings there, then you would walk into the within 2,000 amos of the city, and you would now be safe. So we know that there are rules about Tchum Shabbos. So it's Tchum Shabbos goes by what's considered a city. So we here don't even realize what a city is because everything is contiguous. So the rule for these for what's considered a city in halacha is there have to be contiguous houses within a certain distance. So basically, the entire Eastern Seaboard is one Tchum Shabbos. Not exactly. I mean, there are places. That's true. There are places without contiguous houses, but metropolitan areas. Except actually, interestingly enough, we have here in Manhattan, we're surrounded by rivers, so there are no contiguous houses at some point. So really, Manhattan is its own separate city for these purposes. Some say maybe it connects with a river with the Bronx. Whatever it is, if you live in suburban areas like the entire Bergen County, New Jersey, or you wouldn't have to worry about Tchum Shabbos at all. You think about it, if you go to Israel. So
wait, what about the parks, like national parks and set aside nature areas in, for example, Bergen County? Isn't that an interruption in this?
Yeah, but I think they're completely surrounded by houses.
Could be. Mm-hmm.
If not, so yes, then it would be.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge is more than 2,000.
Yeah, the bridge, the George Washington Bridge, is more than 2,000 miles long. Yeah, so you can't walk. I don't know exactly where it ends. Well, I don't know if the bridge itself. Wait, how long? I don't know if the bridge itself is more than 2,000 miles. We have to measure, but the 2,000 miles start at the end of the city, not on the bridge. So even if you could maybe get to the end of the bridge, you wouldn't be able to continue into New Jersey on Shabbos.
Hmm.
Or maybe you get halfway out down the bridge.
You
I don't
have
know.
To draw a certain square from there.
So you go.
The bridge.
So you don't go. You don't just measure 2,000 amos in a, a fashion. Just that the city looks like this. So the city, they're all going like this. So you don't go. You don't draw the 2,000 amos. Just extend from each point to the city. But rather, first you draw a square around the city, unless the city is already basically square shape, in which case you don't draw another square, or if it's looks like an L or something, so it's already has like defined corners. But if it's an irregular shape, then you draw a square around the city, and then you add 2,000 amos beyond that, and then Manhattan, so you draw a square around Manhattan, and then you'd have 2,000
a rectangle.
You draw a rectangle around Manhattan, and then you would have another 2,000 amos beyond that, and that would be the Tchum Shabbos. But if you go,
but wait, there's something Rav Willig draws it differently or something, so he can walk one way and not the other way or something.
I don't remember the exact cheshbon, but that's part of how the Bronx connects with the Manhattan. There might be certain points where the houses, based on certain calculations, where the houses in the Bronx come close enough to houses in Manhattan that they connect together and would form their. I mean, the whole thing would form one halachic city. Or alternatively, it could be that the box that you draw around the Bronx includes the northern part of Manhattan, the box that you draw on Manhattan does not, would end at the tip of Manhattan, because the Bronx extends down that way. Yankee Stadium is to our south; it's in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. So if you draw that box, so then that means that if you start in you start Shabbos in Riverdale, then you're allowed to walk to Manhattan, to the Washington Heights, rather.
Mm.
But if you start Shabbos in Manhattan, then you wouldn't be allowed to walk to Riverdale.
How's that work?
I guess it could be that
How
others hold.
Work? Because you draw a rectangle around Manhattan, and it won't include Riverdale.
But if you draw a rectangle around the Bronx, then it would include the northern part of Manhattan. Others disagree, and they'd say you could walk between between. I don't remember the exact
What's the matter with calculation. Washington Heights? Why do you have to walk to Riverdale?
Yeah, sometimes people in Riverdale want to come to why you on Shabbos for some reason. So that's the. But if you in Israel,
you
so
can't walk back.
No. Once it goes by where you are at the beginning of Shabbos, unless you put an Eruv Truman. There's something called an Eruv Truman where you could leave some food in a place, and that makes it halachically as if you started Shabbos there, and then
wait
the Truman go.
You can go from, you say Riverdale to Manhattan. We said Manhattan to Riverdale. But people do that.
It depends on where you start Shabbos.
In other words.
And not everyone agrees with this. That's why people do this.
Oh, okay.
So if you live in Riverdale but you want to walk there on Shabbos, but you want to start Shabbos in Washington Heights, so you would have to leave an Eruv Truman in Riverdale.
Oh.
In other words, but.
But can you walk home?
Yeah, so then you can walk home. Right.
Oh, okay.
If, again, assuming that you're allowed to walk from Washington Heights, but not vice versa. So then you would have to put an Eruv Truman. But again, you can't be farther from your Eruv Truman than you're allowed to walk on Shabbos. Then you have a problem, obviously.
Oh, okay.
You can't put an Eruv Truman from, if you start at Washington Heights, you can't put Eruv Truman in Muncie, because there's no way you can walk from Muncie to, actually, I heard about someone. There was a snowstorm or something. And he parked his car. He was trying to get home for Shabbos, couldn't get home for Shabbos. So he parked his car. I hope it was in northern New Jersey. I seem to remember the story being in Manhattan, but then that's a real Shiloh. He walked from Englewood to Muncie on Friday night. He got home at 1 in the morning or something. It took probably 6 hours.
The house is all the way.
I don't know. I hope so.
Life going crazy.
I think so. But I'm not. I don't know.
For Washington Heights, if you go on Broadway,
right.
The houses all the way.
Except for the river, the Harlem River, Spuyten Duyvil.
It's not so long.
Still,
the houses have to be within 73 or so amos of each other in order to connect. Again, there are complex calculations of the four. Okay, but that's that. It could potentially the river there could potentially be an issue. But that's why people don't even think about it. And most people would never get into a shaila of tchum if you're in your regular suburban area on Shabbos. So in Israel, it's easier to visualize because the cities have an end. You could see the end of a city. But not here, unless you have a river, you never see a stark end of the city. You go to Yerushalayim, you go on the highway from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim. So you look at Ramot. So there are houses, or Harnof, houses. All of a sudden, stop, mountain.
Yeah.
So the city ends. Yeah. Done. So that's
what... Tel Aviv is more of a sprawl, though.
But even there, it ends at a certain point.
Really? And it doesn't just...
Well, if you have Gush Dan, so you have Tel Aviv, Ramat Gan, Bnei Brak, all these areas, Givatayim, whatever. So then you have... that is all one, potentially, unless there's a highway that...
But, this is Plaz Yom Tov, too, right?
Yeah, Plaz Yom Tov, too. Yeah. That's why you have to be careful. So again, people don't even think about it because they're used to all this sprawl, but you have to be, you do have to think about it. That if you live in Muncie and you get stuck in Manhattan and you park your car in Manhattan, so it's a big shaila as to whether you would be allowed to walk from Manhattan to Muncie on Shabbos. Maybe you would have to stay here. In the mountains, but also, so you don't have huge contiguous areas of settlement, so you have maps. Each bungalow colony or hotel has a map saying, a drawing showing you where the tchum ends. You're not allowed to walk past there on Shabbos. People think if it's close, So there's a famous story about the Chazon Ish. This was before there was all these buildup of houses between Bnei Brak and Tel Aviv, that they were two distinct towns where it ends. So somebody casually told the Chazon Ish, it was Shabbos afternoon, he said, oh, this morning I davened in Tel Aviv, Shachris. So the Chazon Ish said, what? What do you mean? How could you go to... What do you mean? It's so close. No problem. He says, it's outside the Tchum. So he said, famously, the Chazon Ish very ceremoniously removed all the wine from the table. He says, you're Machal Shabbos. You're not allowed to handle my wine. So then,
ever again?
No. So he made a point. I don't know if he really held that was maker adin, but he was trying to make a point how serious the guy did. So then he said, "Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I do tshuva gemura. I won't do it again. I didn't realize." Then he brought the wine back to the table and made a l'chaim. So why the story went something like that. But yeah, it's something that we definitely have to be cognizant of. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua hu kishever halevi mivchar hashvatim v'nochon la'avodas beis Hashem. So the Leviim are the ones who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'en lo chelek im Yisrael v'nachal ha'sados u'kramim. So they don't have the same type of opportunities as regular Jews have for agriculture, to grow wheat and grapes and all these things. Aval arim hayu tzrichim lahem. You obviously need cities. Al koponim l'sheves heim uvneim v'tapam v'chol chayosam. That they might own animals, and they have their families. They have to live somewhere. Mivnei godel ma'alosem v'choshe palam v'chin erkam. So since there's such a high level, nivchara artzam liklot kol horeg nefesh b'shgaga yoser ma'arotzo shar shvatim. So why? So not only do they need a place to live, but their cities were chosen to be the Ari Miklat, to absorb the those who had killed accidentally. Why? What does the Leviim have to do with Ari Miklat?
They're higher level.
What? It says
they're higher level. The people maybe will raise their own level.
That's what
it sounds like.
Yeah. 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 So they get to deal with. So why should they deal with the scum? You know, maybe
the same idea that the best teacher should be for the weakest class.
Uh huh. Yeah.
You could say that.
Since they'll be in such a holy environment, so it's going to be raised up. So this is a famous machlokes of Judaism. Whether, if people who are on a high spiritual level, whether we should bedavka send them to Dukirov. Say, you're so holy, so the people will be positively impacted by you. But on the other hand, when someone's on a really high level, so if they're going to be dealing with people who are on a lower level, so perhaps they'll be dragged down.
Or at least not refreshing themselves, not even maintaining, you know, not getting new input from, like you said, getting dragged down. Yeah.
Yeah. So here we, in the Sefer Chinuch, we have a riot to the approach that those who are of the highest spiritual caliber should be associating with those of lower caliber, because the more likely they're going to raise them up than be dragged down. And this is true with Chabad.
That's true.
Ve'od ta'am acher badavar. Ki biyosam anshe levav yiduim emalus amidos v'chochvos nichbados. Since they're the smartest, wisest, most sensitive people. Yodua lakol shelo yishmitu harotzech shinotz aleyem belo yigubo. Istimu, I'm sorry, istimu, that they will not resent, and they will not treat someone differently because they have a bad past.
Ah, it's amazing.
So other people might say, "Ugh, here's someone. He's a killer. Let's he'll sit in the back of the bus, and we're not gonna give him too much attention." So specifically, we're going to ignore this guy's past. The Levium will be the ones most in a position to ignore his past and treat him as a regular person. Vafki yarog echad me ohaveihem omigoaleihem. Even if this person accidentally killed a relative or a friend of the people in the Eir Miklat, or in the Levite city. They're going to, instead of getting all passionate, you killed my... They're going to say, no, it was an accident. You know, everything is in God's hands. We don't have to get... So you see that...
Well, I mean, this is unintentional, yes? Unintentional killing, totally unintentional. So it's not... We're not talking about homicidal maniacs here.
That's correct. We're definitely not talking about homicidal maniacs, but... There are three types of accidental killings. One type of accidental killing is, it's something so crazy, you would have had no way of being even thinking about preventing it. So, for example, you have a dumpster.
Oh, God.
And you have a huge pile of trash, you're renovating your house. And there's a dumpster in a back alley, you don't think anyone goes there. And you dump the trash into the dumpster. Then you realize there was someone sleeping in the bottom of the dumpster and you killed him. So that's something that you don't even go to Eir Miklat for.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because it's so totally crazy, you would have had... It's totally not your responsibility. That's number one. Then there's a... That's called karov la'onis. That it's almost like you were forced to do it because there's no... You shouldn't have been expected to prevent it. Number two is that it's something karov lemezid, that it's something that it almost seems as if that you were intending to do it, but it wasn't totally on purpose. That
driving
would be
driving at high speed and hitting.
Driving. So that would probably be the middle category where you do go to Eir Miklat, which is something. That it's not karuv lemezid. It's not like almost we look at it as if you did it on purpose. So if it looks like you almost did it on purpose, so that you don't go to Eir Miklat, and then the Goel Hadam still has a right to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are the blood avengers. So in other words, your job, you don't go to Eir Miklat, but your job, if you want to stay alive, is to protect yourself. In other words, you should install extra locks on the doors of your apartment to make sure that, and you have to, whenever you go on the street, you have to be looking for the Goel Hadam to make sure it doesn't kill you. That's what it's karov lemezid.
Is there a time limit on that?
No.
Then you might as well move to one of those cities.
Bingo.
No, but it doesn't work.
Oh, they could pursue you.
They could pursue you
into
right.
Even
that
Levium, even the city's Levium.
If he's a Goel Hadam. Mm.
Does a Goel Hadam have it? Obligation to kill, or just
the right?
He has the first dibs, so to speak. That someone who's would be of the type of person who would inherit could be a Goel Hadam. So a child, a spouse, whatever, any of these people, if the relative was killed in a manner that was either the middle category or karuv lemezid, so then they have first dibs on killing the person. But again, in that person, even if it's karov lemezid, if it was a shtickle bit of shogeg mixed into it, you could not be killed by the Bezdin. You couldn't be administered an official capital punishment. It's only if they were Edim and Asra and, you know, the whole thing that you did it on purpose and da-da-da-da. That's that you could, if the Goel Hadam doesn't kill you, then the court puts you to death. But in the, if it's Shogeg Karov Lemezid, so then the court would not put you to death, but the Goel Hadam, the would be authorized to put you to death. But even in the, in if it's Mamish on purpose, so the Goel Hadam is, has first dibs before the court.
But does he have...
If it's Shogeg Karov Lemezid, the only option is Goel Hadam. If it's Mamish Mezid, so then the court would step in if the Goel Hadam doesn't do the job.
Okay, so there is a case where...
Oh, but in the first case that I mentioned, where it's Mamish Karov Laones, Shogeg Karov Laones, that you Mamish would should not have taken any precautions, who would have thought, then the Goel Hadam has no right, and if the Goel Hadam kills you, then the Goel Hadam will be put to death.
Okay. Never.
What we're talking about now is the middle case, where it's a case where you should have taken precautions but didn't.
Mm. Reckless and dangerous.
Negligent homicide.
Something like that, yeah. Right. Negligent. So I think the driving, if you drive, if you, so you're not supposed to do that. If you drive in a populated area and you drive really fast and you kill someone accidentally, so that's the middle category. That's you should have taken precautions. So therefore, if you kill someone in a car crash, again, if you ram him, then that's Mazin Mamish. If you accidentally kill him, so then the that's when you go to Ir Miklat. And if you're inching along, you know, on a country road where you shouldn't have expected anyone, and someone throws himself in front of your car and lies there and without you noticing him until you run him over, so then that would be Shogeg Karov Laones. Okay. I mean, obviously, we can come up with a lot of different examples, but that's the basic idea. Val Hashavet Hazeh Hanivchar Nemar HaOmer Lavivli Molo Receive. We just read this in Parshas Vezos HaBracha, that the one of the ways that we praise the Shevet Levi in the Bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu is he says to his father and mother, "I did not see him," meaning that they're totally cerebral. That they don't go with their emotional relationships to other people, but rather they just analyze what is correct in a totally detached and intellectual manner. So if somebody kills your parent and accidentally and really should go to your miklat, so instead of being the Goel Hadam, you're going to forgive them. Okay? So most people would get very outraged and act emotionally. So what the Shevet Levi doesn't act emotionally. That's what they're not supposed to anyway. Velo yata libam avas adam. So people just love for other people will not arouse their passions to the extent that they act in a way that's not in accordance with pure justice. That even the close relatives where it's very natural and expected that they would love them, nevertheless, the love will not cause them to act differently. Certainly other friends. The laws are very short. Mitzvahs hanismachos elach yonazar esdei migrash areim lo yimacher shemesed bar Sinai kasav di ktsas min adinim. So what? How you should construct a city of the Levim? Uchmochein mitzvahs lahavdil areim miklat shemesed shoftim. We'll get there eventually. I say yud besimint of tafkuf nichtav mehem ezras Hashem begzeras Hashem. Sorry. So learn the other mitzvahs well, and you'll get the idea regarding this mitzvah as well. But next mitzvah zo bizman shiyisrael shruyin al admasan v'imin ha-mitzvahs ha-mutalos al tzibor kulam v'yosar al rashi ha'am. So that everybody is obligated to give the make sure that the Levites get their proper cities. So when Mashiach will come. So then we will immediately, after we move back to Eretz Yisrael, we'll make sure to give the Levium their cities.
It's not...
No, this means that the formal restoration of Jewish society, according to the Torah, the way it's supposed to be. Mitzvah toftes, shelo laharog mechuyev kodem shiamud bedin. So we're not allowed to kill someone before he is subject to, goes before the court. Shenimnanu shelo laru gachote kishenirehu ose maisa chet sheizchayev alav misa kodim shenivyehu leveisadin. So we're not allowed to kill somebody who's subject to the death penalty, even if you see right away that he did it, until he comes to the Bezdin. So there you have to bring formal witnesses and you have to have a formal court procedure. So the killer should not die until he comes to judgment. So if he committed adultery, or he murdered, so maybe you kill him right away. He has to be placed in front of the court first. Even if he kills right in front of this big Sanhedrin, they'll all be edim. They're not allowed to just judge him right away. They have to be witnesses, and because ain aid nasa dayan, so if you're a witness, you can now be the judge. So you can't administer the punishment before an official court trial. You have to be very, 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 very careful when dealing with dinei nefashos. When it's tavu ha'eda lios matzilim ha'nidon b'chol davar ha'roi latzilo b'shvilo. So you have to present any arguments that you can find to let him off the hook. Lo shiatu adin kidei latzilo chalila. Not that you change you pervert justice, but rather if they have legitimate reasons to exempt them, so you have to be able to present them. Kavosh darshu zichron lebracha b'shavtu ha'eda v'itzilo ha'eda. And if you can't find anything, if the din is that he's supposed to be put to death, he's put to death. She has to be in front of a court. That the witnesses cannot be judges. They have to be two separate judicial entities. They say, and they'll be emotionally tainted. They'll say, "What, we just saw him kill this other guy, put him to death." They won't be able to properly have analyze intellectually this thing. So this happens a lot, that when people are so connected to something, so they can no longer think about it rationally, but rather it totally becomes consumed by emotions. Midine mitzvah kigon masha amru zicharam lebracha. What are the halachas? The medvar emurim shelo naru gechote adshimei lebezdin kishavar ve'asa hachit. This is talking about when he already committed the sin. V'mishaya rodeif achar chaveru lahargo achar naira me'orasa viziru velo nimna milirdov. What about someone who is chasing after someone to kill him? Or he gives the example here of a betrothed maiden, but it really applies to any of the arayos. So somebody is chasing after someone with whom they are not allowed to have relations with the intent of raping such a person. So you are entitled to kill him. Vizirus, you call after the guy, "Hey, stop chasing!" And he didn't stop chasing. Afabi shalo kibel hasra, even if he didn't acknowledge the fact that he was warned, which is a generally requirement for regular judicial procedures, chayovin anu lahargo muzharin alav. You're required to kill him. Kmo shenichto bezvers Hashem besof seder kiseitze bazaras v'katzosas kapalo sachoseinecha. It talks about the cutting off the hand, the story of when you need to save someone with physical maiming if necessary. So the halacha is that really in such a situation you should try to save the person without killing. So for example, someone, you have a gun and you see someone running after someone else to kill or to rape, whatever. So ideally you shoot him in the legs. Stop him from killing. But if that doesn't work, So then, if you don't have such good aim and she can't get the legs, but you can only get the torso, then you're allowed to kill him.
Then rather, you're allowed to shoot, and if it happens, it kills him. That's covered within the permissible action.
Even though you intended to.
No, if you know that your aim isn't good and the person will be out of your range if you try to shoot for the legs, then you're allowed to shoot to kill.
Rodef.
No, I understand that. I'm just in the reality of shooting, almost no one is a good enough shot
to really be in
control, including the police.
Okay. Friendly fire. So you try.
Conscious. I mean, you know,
friendly fire. Boy,
if you hit, that's probably.
Or, I mean, if you don't have a gun, so you see someone running after someone else to kill or rape, so you're standing in your window, so you jump on him. So if you feel
on the pavement, tough noogie.
Right, exactly. So if you feel that you'll be able to subdue him because you have a black belt in karate and you could subdue him without killing, that's one thing. But if you can't subdue him, or let's say. If you could try hand to hand combat, but he's stronger than you. But you have a gun.
Drop firepower.
So therefore, you kill him. That's the rule. You should try not to, but if you do, and if you do kill, so then or that that's the only way to do it. So then that's how you do it. It's interesting here that this rule is what the Rambam, the way he formulates abortion, that the reason in the famous case of the Mishnah and Olos. That if a woman is having difficulty in labor and her life is in danger, so then you're allowed to cut up the fetus and take it out, obviously kill it, in order to save the life of the mother, because a fetus is as if it's...
A rodef.
If it's a rodef.
Unwilling rodef, obviously.
So the question now is, once you have that, so the way Reb Moshe Feinstein interprets it famously, he's one of the most machmir about abortion, is he says that abortion is a form of murder, even though you're not liable for the death penalty if you're Jewish. At least you're not liable for the death penalty for performing an abortion. Nevertheless, fundamentally, abortion is a form of murder. So the only thing that actually allows you to do it is if you have the concept of rodef, that if the fetus is running after the life of the mother, and the only way to save the mother is by killing it, so then it becomes a rodef, at least until it's partially born, that the head comes out. Then that would no longer be a rodef, that would just be two people.
And wait, that was how the Rambam thought of it too? Or that case was just one case in a range in his presentation?
I mean, that's really the only place in classic halachic sources that abortion is even discussed.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in terms of a specific case being mutter usser. So that's why the very emotion interprets it. Others say not, that the Rambam uses the term rodef in other situations as well, like when you have a boat and there's too much cargo on the boat and you have to lighten the load, otherwise the sailors' lives will be in danger. So you say you're allowed to throw the cargo overboard even if you don't own it, because the cargo is like a rodef. Mm-hmm. That's why the Tzitz Eliezer famously has a much more lenient approach to abortion. The Tzitz Eliezer says that abortion, at least for Jews, has nothing to do with the prohibition of murder. Rather, it's independent prohibition of, like, you're just not allowed to destroy things for no reason. So that's, or you're not allowed to harm a person. So for abortion is a form of harming, because it harms the fetus and also harms the mother, whether, you know, physically. So therefore, that's why Reb Moshe Feinstein has a much higher standard for an abortion would be, again, we're talking only for Jews. For non-Jews, it's a different story. For non-Jews, the rules are more stringent. But if time out for Jews, so that's why Reb Moshe Feinstein has a much higher standard for when he would allow an abortion from the Tzitz Eliezer. Tzitz Eliezer would allow an abortion if the mother is under, not stam, she, you know, we have a situation, I think I mentioned on Shavuos, where there was, you know, a woman who had in her head all her life, she only wanted two children. And then she got pregnant with a third, so she says, I want to have an abortion.
Okay.
So that, I don't think any post-kid went allowed, unless it's causing her really extreme mental distress.
But then take the other two children away.
Perhaps. Right. So again,
God,
as I said at the time, it's hard to imagine a firm woman saying such a thing.
Well,
but
it's not impossible. Not all firm women are like the mothers in Mashpacha magazine, you know.
Frida, we're talking about a third child. Calm down.
No,
we're not
no.
talking about number 12.
No, I'm talking about number 3. I mean, there are women who are not eating themselves up alive because
no.
they have children.
No, that's not what I said.
Whatever.
No, that's not what I said. There could be situations where a woman has two children and they're terrors, and she's going, and she's driving,
that.
And she's going out of her mind,
sure.
and she's taking all precautions, but somehow she gets pregnant anyway. So then she says, "I mamish can't handle. I want an abortion." That's not the case. I said
okay.
she always had in her head
she wanted
two children.
Okay,
not that she can't handle them.
It wasn't based in life. It was based
right,
on
but just to play, I don't even know if it's devil's advocate because I have mixed feelings on all this stuff. I can see different.
Yeah.
I can see a lot of different points of view. It could be that if she was serious about, okay, what am I really supposed to do about this, and she takes some halakhic advice or instruction or whatever level of whatever she's doing, and she ends up having it, and it ends up working out okay. It might not work out okay, too, and she's thinking about that. But, you know, there could be a scenario where she decided to have it and it wouldn't be so bad.
What?
There could be a scenario which, if she were forbidden to have an abortion on those grounds, she might actually be able to deal with it. On the other hand, she might not. So.
You mean on the grounds that she just feels like she only wanted to? What do you mean?
Yeah. It's a little... Okay,
anyway,
it's a little,
so in the story that I was actually told, so then someone managed to convince her in the end not to have an abortion. Okay, so they... so then years later, so... the third child came to yeshiva and introduced himself to one of the rabbanim there who was dealing with a shayla. He says, "Oh, you're the third child." Again, I don't think he told him the whole story. But
oh,
he said, I don't know if he said it out loud, but in his head.
Oh,
this is the third child that we saved. Okay.
Oh my. Goodness.
Anyway.
Saved. Abortion problems when the testing shows that the fetus is damaged. And
So that was a case where the Tzitz Eliezer wrote his tshuva. So the Tzitz Eliezer writes that if a woman finds out that her child has Down syndrome, Shmona Litzlan.
Tay-Sachs, that's another good one.
Oh, Tay-Sachs also. Yeah.
Somebody, et cetera.
So if you find out about Tay-Sachs or even I think he talks about Down syndrome. You're right. The original tshuva, I think, was Tay-Sachs, but I think
Tay-Sachs.
He writes... You're right, I said it wrong. But then it could be applied to Down syndrome also. Now, if you find out that, then the Tzitz Eliezer said that if it causes her major emotional distress, he says for Jews, the prohibition of abortion is only an Isser of Chabalah, of wounding, and not Isser Ritzicha, not related to murder at all, so therefore he allows it. So
does it depend on the
time?
How far along it is? Or does it depend?
So he makes up a time, he says, until the seventh month. That's one of Rav Moshe Feinstein's tainos. That Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a very strong tshuva against this because he holds it's a type of murder.
7 months.
Again, you're not liable for death penalty, but he says it's a part of the prohibition of murder. So therefore, he says not only is the Tzitz Eliezer completely wrong, and if you follow him, you're really going to bad places. So not only that, but he said he came up with this idea of 7 months. 7 months we don't find anywhere. Either if it was before 40 days,
already.
Or it's until birth. So where does he come up with the 7 months? Okay, whatever. So I don't know. I think, it's a very, very complicated shot, but I believe, again, that's after 40 days. Before 40 days, so that it's not even really considered a fetus in halacha. So then there are more leniencies.
So that was not pretty. But
I hear, okay.
Yeah, so whatever.
I would drop Down syndrome from that story. You know, there's a big movement now to say that's not a...
Right, but according to the Tzitz Eliezer, whether it's justified or not, if the woman was extremely emotionally distressed that she was going to have a child with Down syndrome, then he would allow it. Again, whether you should or shouldn't is a different story. Then even if we know for sure that this person should be subject to death penalty, nevertheless, then we're not allowed to put him to death until he comes in front of the Bezdin. So at the time of the Beis HaMikdash in particular, but in the time where you have the functioning rabbinic courts at the level that can handle capital cases. Belver Azev, the Hargu Lachote Kodem Shiavo Leves, then Afilim Hayadino Sheshaibes, and Dina Hargo Kedin Rotseach. Not only that, but even if one of the witnesses who sees the person commit murder puts him to death of his own accord, he is now subject to the death penalty.
Who, the witness?
Yeah. In other words, before the Beis Din declares that this person is subject to death penalty, not allowed to kill.
Wait, what if it's a rodent?
Right, if not a rodent. Okay. This is talking about once it's done already.
Once it's done already, then you're not allowed to.
If a person is not a rodent, but rather, or if it could be, If the person is not a rodent but did the deed already, and then you kill him, so then you are liable for the death penalty for killing that person. Okay. Continue, Baruch Hashem, next week.